thank you so much for inviting me. It's a big honor to be here, and to me especially, it's very interesting and to see so many people, so many children with Phelan McDermid together. So I'm looking all around and I'm really observing all your children. Wonderful to be here. I'm a physician assistant, just a physician for people with intellectual disability working in Groningen, in the northern part of the Netherlands. And I'm trying to tell you something about Luke. And Luke will take us to communication, intellectual and adaptive functioning, somatic problems, and challenging behavior. And I hope that I can explain to you that all these subjects are related to each other. Well, Luke is 8 years old, and he has a mild to moderate intellectual disability. He doesn't talk. Luke is sweet and friendly and has the Phelan-McDermid syndrome, obviously. He regularly catches a cold and is otherwise in good health. Recently, his parents see that he's playing less with other children, and he's ignoring his caretakers at the daycare center, and he's reacting angrily when spoken to. So let's talk about his intellectual disability. The definition of it is that there should be limitations in both intellectual and adaptive functioning. Intellectual functioning is about the learning, about the brain functioning, about the intelligence. And it should be, we are talking about an IQ below 70 or 75. The mean IQ of the general population is 100. Adaptive functioning are the skills that are learned in the daily life. And there are three types of adaptive functioning, conceptual skills and social skills and practical skills. And the conceptual skills is just the knowledge of language, how to use your language, the knowledge of number concepts, etc. Social skills you all have. It's family, is being social, is having a self-esteem, is also, for example, the ability to follow rules. And practical skills are just combing your hair, and knowing to travel, being very practical. There are several degrees, and you know them probably, and they vary from profound to learning difficulty, with the IQ varying from 20 to 85. But there's also a relation with the developmental age, and maybe you have your children more. Maybe you know the developmental age of your children. And for example, Luke, he has this moderate to mild disease, and you see the very big gap between it. So it's sometimes very hard to determine the developmental age. 4 years, a child of four, you don't send to the ballet lesson on the other end of the village. Of 11, you can do if you have a very beautiful village. Well, you can assess this intellectual functioning. There are several tests available in all different kinds of languages. And the psychologist or behavioral therapist will know what test to use. And those tests are available from very young to, adulthood. And also verbal tests, but also non-verbal tests exist, and that's more that's for our population important. But I don't know if you're still awake after all these talks. Let's test you a bit. This is the one from the WISC, and you understand that you have to fill in the question mark. So it's a logical row, and you can choose from the row below. And can I see your hands? Is the answer one? Who chooses the one? No one. And who's choosing two? And who's choosing three? And four? And five? So you don't see the group, but I see that there are not many very parents daring to answer. The right answer is two. But now you know that stress is influencing the intellectual functioning. if you have stress, you can't think right. So you have to choose immediately, and you don't know the right answer. And it's not only stress, it's of course also language. If you don't understand what a person is saying, or you don't can give the right answer, it influences the intellectual functioning. Motoric skills, like having a pen or putting some things on a cupboard, for example. And social emotional skills, if you are too young to be able to have the test emotionally, it's hard to give the right answer. And adaptive functioning is more measuring all those other domains. So if a person has estimated to have a cognitive ability below 2 years, a profound disability, it's not useful to test his cognitive abilities. So you try to assess the adaptive functioning. Several tests available for adaptive functioning also. And the difference is that adaptive functioning is about observing and interviewing. And intellectual functioning is asking the person itself to do some things. So that's a big difference. And why is it important to test or to assess the intellectual functioning? Well, then you can offer the right things to learn. And learning is easy. You do it by looking at your environment and looking at other people. And children learn that way. Children with an intellectual disability do it just the same, but just maybe in slower steps and in smaller steps. And it's very important to maintain the skills, and you do it by rehearsing a lot more. And the more severe, the more profound intellectual disability is, the more rehearsal and the smaller steps are needed during the learning process. And of course, you have to give very thick, very big thumbs up all the time to augment the effect of the learned skills. So this is an example. When you want to learn to brush your teeth and you just show this picture, a person is doing this and nothing else. So this may help a little bit. But if you want to put more steps to it, you explain that you have to use a toothbrush and toothpaste and have to spit it out. But of course, if you want to make your dentist really happy, you have to explain it in very small steps. I'll take you to two types of learning. This is a type that's called learning by experience. And this is a mom who gave her daughter a towel to dry the dishes. And you can understand that this child is losing a lot of dishes. So she's breaking all glasses, breaking all dishes, and mom's buying new ones and just laughing at the process because they share a very social moment, and it's a great way to learn. And after a while, the daughter is breaking less dishes and trying and is able to do this movement, this motoric movement. And she's assisted by mom if she can't do it. So that's a great way of learning. And the other way is errorless learning. And then you avoid breaking of the dishes. So, for example, when you ask someone to throw the ball in the circle, you bring the circle to the person, to the ball, and not the other way around. And there are several methods to do that. And this is one that is called stimulus fading. If you want to learn the difference between a spoon and a fork, you emphasize with a color the fork. And after a while, the fork is having the same color as the spoon, but a person can recognize the form of the fork and the spoon. I have the idea that you use much more words than I do. And I'm so thankful of your translation. Yeah. So really, thanks. This is stimulus shaping. Then you use the shape of the letters into the and use the animals to learn. And Katie also mentioned the word cat. Well, here's the cat representing the sea, and the S is representing the snake. And after a while, you leave out the animals, and you recognize the forms, the shapes of the letters. And the last one is the superimposition, and that means that you use two type of stimuli and leave out one at a later moment. So if you want to learn that there's a hot mug of coffee or a hot mug of chocolate, you point at a pictogram of hot, a red pictogram, and after a while you can leave out the pictogram and just mention the word hot. So back to Luke, he doesn't talk. And communication, language and speech is a very big chapter in the guideline. You have it already. It was written by Monica Bourdais. I think they did an excellent job. Here's a figure that shows the difference between verbal and non-verbal communication, which means gestures and joint attention, but also the difference between expressive and receptive communications. Expressive means that you are talking, and receptive means that you understand what you have listened to. Well, we already spoke, and you know that there are a lot of people that have speech and language problems in Phelan-McDermid syndrome, and this figure shows, for example, the difference between having a deletion or having a variant, so there are differences. The light beam, light green beam is the variant, and those people with the variant can speak easy. More people with the variant can speak sentences and speak fluently. And this one is also interesting. That's the age of verbal acquisition. When does a person speak the first words? And this is a huge gap between some persons speak it at 8 months, but also it's possible that some people start speaking the first words at 8 years. So it's learning us to be very patient. Unfortunately, loss of speech also occurs in almost 40% of the people with Phelan-McDermid. And of those 40%, they regain speech also. It's mostly happening in the early ages, in childhood. And parents report that the understanding is better preserved than the expressive skills. So what influences the speech? Well, we already talked about the difference between the variant and the deletion. but also the developmental age is important. If one has a profound disability, it influences it more than a more mild disability. The environment is very important. If no one talks to you, you don't start speaking words. So it's very important to speak and start at a young age. And also somatic factors influence it. So if you have, for example, the hearing problems, you can't learn quickly. Or if you have hypotonia, the muscle of your mouth is getting very slurry, so you can't understand it. I try to imitate it. And if a person is not being understood by other people, he is learning less quick. So what can you do about it? Well, very early intervention is necessary. You have to communicate at the level a person can understand. And you can make use of augmented communication. And this means that you can use sign language. Well, Inge already told us that we saw that several people doing, and it's great to see. But also pictograms you can use, or speech computers, for example. In short, the recommendations of communication are always check the hearing, start with that, and have a multidisciplinary approach to speaking and communication. And the most important person in this team is the pre-verbal therapist. You start at a very young age, before even words are spoken. And therefore, you need parent support, because parents have to do all the work. And it's important to know that if you use speech computers, for example, it doesn't slow the speaking, the learning of the communication. Well, I'll go quickly through these slides, but communication with the doctor is also a very big problem sometimes, and Inge mentioned it already, because the doctor has little time, don't understand the person, don't speak the language, don't know the syndrome, have a busy environment. And tips for you as a parent or caregivers that you always have to accompany a person, of course, and prepare the visit. Write your questions down and take them to the doctor. And be prepared to answer what happened, when did it happen, where did it happen, and why did it happen, and what do you think yourself? And try to speak in symptoms and not in diagnosis, because when you speak in diagnosis, the doctor gets irritated. And when you speak in symptoms, he has a fever, I'm worried, it's more easy for a doctor to understand what's going on. Well, I teach doctors also to learn, and I say, well, please be present, be yourself, talk at a normal level to a person, don't be childish, and have time to do your consultation. And please listen to the parents, and that's evidence-based, and it's called parent knowledge. And parent knowledge is a combination of intuition, knowing your child better than anyone else, knowing the differences, knowing the syndrome, and have a lot more experience than the doctor about your child and what's going on. These are tools you can use to explain sometimes to other people or to your child if he is able to understand these kind of pictures, what's happening. Back to Luke about his cold and health. The prevalence in people in general, people with an intellectual disability is really different than people in the general population. And that's not something most practitioners know. And here you see, for example, the figure of chronic diseases, heart diseases, pulmonary diseases. The dotted line are people of the general population, and the striped line are people with intellectual disability. And you can immediately see that there are more chronic diseases at a younger age, and there are more often multiple diseases at the same time. Well, Michael did this great overview of symptoms together with Sarah. I haven't seen her yet, but she's going to be there also, and other people. And this is an overview of the prevalence of diseases in the Phelan-McDermid syndrome. Also, you can be found in the guideline. And it's based on literature. But what's interesting, and Inge mentioned it already, that when Annemiek Landlers did the survey among parents, she had different numbers. So in literature, we find a prevalence of 26% of sleeping problems in the case of a deletion. But in the survey, parents report 57%. So it's important to speak out. What do you see? What are you experiencing? And now I go very quickly through some chapters of the consortium, of the guideline. And this one is about sleep. And you recognize the problems, falling asleep, restless sleep, incontinence or grinding teeth, all disturbing the sleep. And and sleep problems can start at a very young age and during a lifetime. And this morning we spoke about the influences about learning, the sleep on learning and concentration, but also about the influence of sleep on parents and the rest of the family. And you know all it by your own experience. Well, sleep hygiene is very important. Have behavioral modification, have a cool room, have rituals before bedtime, etc., etc. But also exclude other factors. Is it not a psychiatric problem, like Inge told us about? Is it not a more physical problem, which is disturbing the sleep? And if you can't get a better sleep, sometimes a referral to a sleep center is very important and can help you out. Talking about epilepsy, well, in 27% people are seeing seizures, and seizures get more common with age. Most of the time you see absences, and absences are just very, sometimes very not not visible, because it's just staring at some point during 1 or 2 seconds, and it's you can overlook it quickly. But also bigger seizures occur. No specific treatment other than the national guidelines. And we have the gastrointestinal problems, the reflux, for example, hypotonia, the problems with swallowing and chewing, dental problems occur, crowding of the teeth or grinding the teeth, we mentioned it, eating inedible subjects, Inge mentioned it already. Cyclic vomiting only in small children occur and can be very serious. And deficiencies, for example, zinc deficiency, can cause more seizures or more hyperactivity. So sometimes it should be checked. Lymphedema. Well, I often see lymph, it's only occurring in the deletion, and I often see it just when it's in a very early stage, and then you see it off the suck prints and or just pressure spots, and then you should start treating it, also according to national guidelines. The sensory functioning is about seeing and the hearing, and in Phelan-McDermid there's a specific phenotype. There's a hypo-reactivity to hearing and seeing, which means that children have a delay in what's being said, or can't hear your voice in a big room or in a crowded room, for example. There's also a hypersensitivity to touch. So if you stroke gently, a person can react very angrily. But if you have a firm grip, it's better. Then the reduced pain response is a very important one, because diseases can go very bad before noticing that there's something going on. And of course, the sensitivity to heat, which is probably caused to hypohidrosis, less sweating. Well, Luke is reacting angrily. And what causes that? Diseases in people with intellectual disability present differently. So if one has an itch, he is not scratching itself, but he's pinching or slapping itself. And different anatomy can also cause a different presentation. For example, the syndactyly, that two toes are grown together, can cause a fungus more easily. A different cause also can occur. So an altered pain response, we already said, can lead to a severe infection. And so you have symptoms that can be seen by others, like fever, bruises, weight loss, but you also have symptoms that cannot be seen by others. And a person can communicate about it or cannot communicate about it. So adequate reaction can follow, but it's also the case that nothing is done. And then somatic problems can worsen, and this is a very high risk on behavioral problems or challenging behavior. And this is how things get worse. So, for example, someone has daycare changes, or a woman has a menstruation period with mood problems. Well, there's a heat wave going on. We are enjoying the weather, but a person has problems with the heat. It can lead to mood swings, irritability, eating less, and sleeping problems. And if nothing is done, it can lead to worse problems, worse behavior problems, like self-injury or agitation. And in the worst case, someone is starting antipsychotic medication, neuroleptica, just to treat a menstruation problem. And the effects can be very, very severe, as Inge already explained, very, very, very good. Well, luckily it can be better, but you have to pay attention. So we have the same situation, but in case of a heat wave, you can have a heat plan and you can take measures. In case of a menstruation, you can try if oral anticonceptives can help. And in case of daycare changes, you can prepare your child to the day, to the changes. And I can't emphasize enough that a regular physical examination when things have changed is very, very important. If necessary, low dose of medication is better than a normal dose, a regular dose of medications. So when there are sleeping problems, you can start with a low dose of sleeping medication, for example. Regular consultation with the daycare team is also very important, and you have to evaluate every step. But that can be hard. Working with other people around your child is sometimes very challenging. You, as a parent, you have a very delicate balance between work, your own life, your other family members, the things you like, your hobbies. There's often insufficient support, and the relationships often get under pressure. And in a worst case, it can lead to caregiver burnout. The doctors you are working with have insufficient understanding of the problems and don't recognize the problems. And there's a lack of knowledge about the syndrome. And in case of a daycare, for example, there are often staff changes, or the staff is not is understaffed. And this leads to powerlessness, polarization, anger and grief, and opposite ideas. And maybe you know this picture of the elephant and the seven blind monks. So every blind monk is recognizing a different part of this elephant, has a different perspective on it. And one is saying it's a very thin, hairy animal. And another one is saying, well, no, it's very big and it's very hard. I don't understand. So you have to listen to all those perspectives and bring them together to know, to increase your shared knowledge. And this really is important. And you have to identify causative factors, but also protective factors of challenging behavior. What is happening? What did help? What didn't help? And you have to do that on all the domains, the mental health, the environment, learned behavior, etc. And it's never one problem. I wished it was, but it's never one problem. It's always and the environment, and a somatic problem, and understaffing. So you have to identify those factors. And then you implement one step and try to evaluate. Did it help? Was it working? So what can you do yourself? And I can't emphasize this enough. Please, please take good care of yourself. And you know, here's the airplane, they always say, take your own oxygen first, and you have to do that. You can make use of the checklist, which is very important, which is in German, and the checklist is about the state of your child on that moment. And doctors can use this checklist to evaluate your loved one. So every year, for example, they can try to examine it. Use a signaling plan. What's happening when he's restless? What's happening when he's slapping itself? And what can we do? Make a video. It was a tip of a parent. And ask for specialized help. Well, Luke was having hearing problems and had recurrent ear infection. He also had a hypersensitivity to auditory stimuli. And there was, of course, a lot of noise, like here. He now has a planning board which make him prepare for the day. And the staff in daycare is aware that they have to talk to him up close and not from far away. And if there's a lot of noise in the room, he's using his headphones with his favorite music. Luke is getting better. But of course, it's just a moment. And it's not only about Luke, it's about all those persons with Phelan-McDermid. And I hope I gave you some tools to find the best medical solution together. Thank you very much.
Fragen? Gibt es Fragen? An die beiden? Also vielleicht sowohl an Inge, also wenn es um